This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Sorry, we'll do that again. I had to jump in ahead of you. No, you do it, you do it, you do it.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Keeping Up.
Do it again.
You're such an idiot.
You're going to put this in, aren't you?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. My name is Efi Falkafash.
And my name is Alan Doherty. Welcome.
We want to thank all the subscribers to the Head Stuff Plus Network for continuing to support us and continuing to still be here despite your rants, Anne.
Yeah, we're up to like six listeners now.
We're up to six listeners, I believe.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Actually, we're not doing too bad. We're not doing too bad.
I don't look at the numbers. I just mock them.
Yeah. We're not doing too bad. Our listenership is steadily increasing. And I think that's a great, great thing.
Excellent.
So how has your week been?
It's been good, actually. Busy. Always busy.
I know. We drove together to work for the first time in ages last week.
I know.
We normally take two separate cars, even though we work in the same hospital. And
they're electric cars though, as well, for the environmentalists.
I was about to just say that. Yeah, they're both electric cars. And because we have completely different schedules.
Yeah, we tried doing one car and it actually ended up increasing the childcare bill significantly.
Yeah.
And we just bugged each other so much that it really wasn't going to work out.
And I forgot how annoying it was to have you in the car with me. Oh my God. She just never shuts up about her rat runs that she takes the shortcuts that she takes all the way to work.
Afif is a fast car and I don't know why, because it's like driving Miss Daisy. He's sauntering vaguely toward the lights. And I'm like, okay, if you take a left here, you'll actually bypass those lights. And you'll be down the road before you know it. Like,
I'm actually really nervous in the car with you because you're such an aggressive driver.
I'm not aggressive.
You are.
Aggressive is like full on road rage. I'm not. I'm assertive. I like get to work.
Our two kids learned all their bad words and swear words from being in the car with you. Let's be honest.
That's not true either. Faisal learned the F word at school. As he demonstrated on the school steps in front of his teacher. And he just illustrated the multitude of ways that it may be used perfectly in context each way. And his teacher nearly died. And actually his teacher is from Ballina. That teacher is from Ballina. Everybody's from Ballina.
Continuing the theme. Yeah, when he learnt it, he came and he told you, Mama, guess what? I know what the F word is.
It's beep, and said it. And he goes, but you can say it so many different ways. You can say beep you. You can say beep this beeping thing. You can say what the beep. And he just went on and on and on in front of the entire school at pickup.
And the teacher was trying to cover his mouth.
Yeah, I just grabbed him and ran. He was so proud of himself.
I think you were a little bit proud of him as well.
Well, in fairness, to pick it up and to get all the context so accurate, I felt like, you know, he was finally learning to listen to something.
Yeah. Exactly. And he used it so appropriately as well.
This is it. Like, it takes a lot. Like, he didn't get one context wrong.
The problem is I'm yet to hear our daughter swear. And she's nearly 15. Oh, she's nearly 16.
She swears with me.
Does she?
Sometimes, yeah.
What?
Yeah, she does.
This is news to me.
The odd time. She's nearly 16. She's really frustrated.
What does she say?
The odd word.
The worst thing she has said is fiddlesticks in front of me.
I know. That's because she's determined to stay your little princess, because it gets her exactly what she wants in life.
Mm. I know.
Yeah. But yeah, driving with you, I do. I hate when you drive my car. I hate it.
Why? I'm such a good driver. I think that's why you get jealous, because no. I'm a much better driver than you are.
I hate it when you drive my car. I don't know what it is. It just bugs me so much.
It's the loss of control.
It's my car. Why are you driving my car if I'm in it?
But
it's my car.
Because I like to be the driver all the time.
I know, exactly. That's why it bugs me. Like, why do you need to be the driver? I'm an excellent driver. In fact, you did teach me how to drive. Okay, context here. When we were just married, I was still learning to drive because I'd always lived in town. Hang on a second. Hang on. I did shush you. I'm going to get in trouble for that. People will hate me for that. But seriously, I lived in town in Dublin. I had no need to drive.
She was 30 and I was still dropping her to work.
No, 29. You don't have to mention numbers of me. But anyway, it's not that I mind the age. It's, yeah, just a bit, yeah. I just never got around to it. But anyway, so in the first 3 years of our marriage, we did a mega stress test on the relationship.
Yep.
Afif taught me how to drive.
On an automatic, though.
First on an automatic, but then I learned how to drive manual and did the second test.
You did that yourself.
I know. And I passed both first time, I'd just like to say. So Afif taught me how to drive. Relationships have floundered unless we had our first child. Mega stress test. We also moved house twice in the first 3 years of our marriage. And I think three or four times in the first 5 years of our marriage.
Yep.
So, like, seriously, the last 10 years have been an absolute cakewalk in comparison to that. Isn't that true? When you think of it that way, like.
Yeah, exactly. I know. We've survived so much.
I know. And do you remember packing to move? Do you remember your mother came over to help us pack? She came over for like 2 or 3 weeks to have a holiday. And she pretty much had the house packed when she left.
Do you remember we used to go to work and we'd come home, and every time we come home, there's a drawer organized.
Oh, the hot press. Like, yes. She'd land in the door, and by the time she had her shower done, the hot press was organized, color coordinated. The towels were organized by size, different shelves had different labels. And that's just because the woman took a shower. She was brilliant.
Is my mother's cleanliness and OCD-ness with cleaning going to be an overarching theme?
No, your mother's brilliance. Like, seriously, I know maybe some people have a thing about like maintaining control on the house that's theirs or something. It only bugs me with you. It doesn't bug me with your mother. Is that okay?
Anyway, what are we going to talk about today?
Oh, loads of things, actually.
Over the last couple of episodes of the Baby Tribe podcast, we spoke about the association between screen time and vocalization in babies. Remember that?
Yes,
I do. And then in today's episode of the Baby Tribe podcast, we actually spoke about screen time and abnormal sensory processing. Mm. So if you haven't listened to the episode, please go back and have a listen. It's a very informative and good episode for anybody that is a parent, or even people that do not have children that are interested in those associations. But the big thing we spoke about is the fact that these things are more of an association than a cause and effect relationship. And when you actually take into account a lot of other variables, a lot of other confounders that might affect speech and also might affect abnormal sensory processing, the relationship between screen time and those outcomes isn't as strong. And sometimes it's almost completely eliminated when you account for other things. And we spoke about that as well on the Keeping Up with the Kardashians episode last week. And we want to really bring this theme across to maternity.
Yeah.
And the debate about epidurals.
So many things to do with labor pain relief.
Yes.
I just think that, you know, association is misconstrued as causation for people who like to use it to further their own agenda.
So I want to lay out a narrative and then tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So when we looked at the data, we found that the rate of epidurals, or the rate of first-time mums availing of a epidural, regardless of how they deliver, is around 70 to 75%. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah.
That was what was in the study. So a significant...
Feels more. When you're at work, it feels more. Yeah. But yes, yeah,
that
fair
was,
enough.
I mean, it's a significant number of mums that actually want an epidural. And sometimes there is this narrative that you see sometimes on social media that if you use pain relief, such as an epidural during your labor, that you're no longer having a physiological birth, number one. And that it might interfere with your physiology, and that it might interfere with your labor, and it might interfere with your breastfeeding relationship, and that some of the medication might actually harm the infant.
Yeah.
You do see that. And I wanted Anne to talk about this and maybe debunk some of those assertions.
I suppose there's a few different questions that I get. Okay. First of all, I get asked, is this going to influence the length of my labor? Second of all, I get asked, is this going to influence me needing an instrumental delivery or a cesarean delivery? And then the third thing you get asked is, having fentanyl in my epidural going to influence my success at breastfeeding? And there's been a lot of information, a lot of studies done on these various different things, but I'm going to try and break it down in a really concise way. So with labour, there's the first stage, the second stage, the third stage. And the first stage is until you get to 10 centimetres. The second stage is from 10 centimetres until you're delivering the baby. Okay, and most often that's the time when people are pushing. With the first stage of labour, previously and prior to, say, around 2005, we were using quite concentrated, dense concentrations of local anaesthetic for pain relief in labour. And that was having an impact on progress in the first and second stages and potentially an impact on instrumental deliveries. So since about 2005, there's been a big move toward moving toward more and more and more dilute concentrations of local anaesthetic. And what that does is it kind of works more with the physiological processes of labour. You will feel more pressure. You will feel tightening. You will feel a lot more sensation of your labour and you will feel the baby being delivered. But that, what I would kind of call that gripping pain or that sharp pain, would ideally be at least very blunted and ideally eliminated while preserving the other sensations of labour and delivery. And since we've started moving away from those very dense local anaesthetics to the less concentrated ones, there is no association between instrumental deliveries, cesarean deliveries, and having an epidural. And I think we need to be absolutely clear on that.
So to summarise, it does improve the sensation of pain, but you are still pretty much aware of your body during labour.
In the ideal world, yes. This is where you move from the science to the art side of anaesthesia. Every labour is different. In the same woman, different labours with different babies, it's going to be a different sensation potentially. Okay, so how the baby moves down through the pelvis, whether you require an induction, whether, you know, there's a lot of different things that can play into how that process evolves, and that will determine the sensations that you have. So some people may require more concentrated local anaesthetics to achieve that level of pain relief, depending on how the labour is progressing. But ideally, we give as little as possible to get optimal effect. With the first stage of labour, an epidural can delay it up to about a half an hour max. So that's a half an hour on what can be, what, an 8 or 10 hour process, you know, or even longer. So again, it's down to an individual's choice. Some people might be happy enough to have the extra half an hour, provided that they've got good pain relief throughout their labour. You know, some people may say, I don't want anything, and that's fine. We live in a world of options. But I think people need to understand that there's that half an hour is the trade-off for the first stage. For the second stage, you're talking about 15 minutes. The pushing stage in labour can, it doesn't absolutely mean it's going to be, but it can be increased by about 15 minutes. Again, some women are happy enough to have that extra 15 minutes there if they get good labour analgesia for the previous 12 hours or so. You know, that is how it works. Obviously, it'd be shorter if you were on your second or third baby because your labours are shorter. And you may not actually need an epidural. So the uptake of epidurals in subsequent labours is less, actually, because they your body's a little bit different. Every labour is different.
Okay, so second time mothers, the rate is probably isn't as high as 75-80%.
No,
okay.
Definitely not. The other thing that's really important is that there's no increased risk of negative short-term neonatal outcomes.
And on that, we have looked at this data actually in the Rotunda Hospital in first time mothers. And wanted to see whether receiving an epidural had an impact on the breastfeeding journey over the first 3 days. We know that there's a lot of things that can affect whether a mother that intends on breastfeeding leaves the hospital only breastfeeding or leaves the hospital with a combination of breastfeeding and formula. And we know that there's a big drop off in the rate of exclusive breastfeeding from about 80% in the mothers that are intending down to about 40% by the time they go home. So half of the mothers that are intending on exclusively breastfeeding leave the hospital using formula. epidurals was not one of the risk factors for using formula.
I was looking into this, and I don't know if you have read the Japanese Environment and Children's Study report on breastfeeding rates until 6 months in Japan. It was published in 2021 in one of the Nature Journal scientific reports. So they looked at about 80,000 Japanese mother-baby pairs, and they looked at those who continue to breastfeed exclusively until 6 months. Now, that's just a marker. It doesn't mean it's successful. It doesn't mean it's unsuccessful. It just means it's a marker. Okay, so for people who would like to maintain breastfeeding exclusively until 6 months, they found that the biggest impact on that was early initiation of breastfeeding, early skin to skin and rooming in, and that golden hour. So good nursing and midwifery support in the first few days postpartum was actually their biggest impact on success, or those big, their biggest impact on reaching that six month mark. So supported initiation. And they had a 37.4% people feeding exclusively until 6 months, breastfeeding exclusively until 6 months out of those 80,000. They found the inhibiting factors were starting childcare. Again, we have so many women who will start weaning their babies from breastfeeding so that they can go back to work at 6 months. And that is just the structure of our system. Whereas in Canada, where we had our second child, it was a year. So it was much easier for me to feed my son and continue feeding my son until he was nearly 9 months. Whereas in Ireland, I would have weaned him earlier if we had him in Ireland.
And in Canada, you are eligible for employment insurance, which means a paid salary for the first year after being a taxpayer for only 3 months in the country. Yeah.
So I think the supports, this, those kind of economic factors and social factors, plus good lactation support in the beginning, is far more influential on breastfeeding figures than whether or not you have fentanyl in your epidural, because that's what people, there was a study in 2005, I think, that came out that was talking about fentanyl in the epidural pump and whether that impacted negatively on successful breastfeeding rates. And that has been debunked. Okay, the fentanyl is there in your epidural maintenance infusion to limit the amount of local anaesthetic you need, because they both act synergistically with each other. So you will need less local anaesthetic. Okay, the less local anaesthetic you use will give you that dilute concentration that we're talking about, so that it won't impact on your delivery. So it'll give you the pain relief you need without any of the side effects or the adverse effects of having an epidural during your labour. So it's important. And I actually took the trouble to look at the drugs and lactation database. And when the last revision on fentanyl was done in January of this year. And it states that when used epidurally or intravenously during labour or for a short time immediately postpartum, any amounts of fentanyl in the neonate are usually small and are not expected to cause any adverse events in breastfed infants. And that is their official summary statement on that. And I think that we just need to move past all of that now.
And unfortunately, we're still hearing the narrative sometimes on social media saying that if you get an epidural, then your baby will be lazy after delivery and they won't breastfeed as well.
Yeah, there's not a lot of evidence for that. And it's interesting because IM pethidine is still widely available and widely used, and it is a viable option for labour pain relief. But if you look at IM pethidine versus any fentanyl in labour, more women who receive pethidine will actually have difficulty establishing lactation and a breastfeeding relationship early in the postpartum period, because it more of it moves into the baby. But and that was from an RCT that was done, and it's reported again on the same website that has the drugs and lactation database website. So I think go for whatever pain relief you feel suits you. Okay, I don't think there's any long-term adverse outcomes on the baby relating to your labor pain relief decisions, and just be kind to yourself.
Yeah. So to summarize, the relationship between receiving an epidural and fentanyl and the breastfeeding relationship is not significant when the other far more important factors are in place. Mm-hmm. Early skin to skin.
Yes.
Feeding within the first golden hour.
Yes.
Proper midwifery support over the first few days.
Yeah.
Then the relationship is no longer there. And we've actually looked at this in the Rotunda as well. There is no difference between vaginal birth and C-section birth in terms of
Early skin-to-skin contact.
Yes, yeah. And establishing breastfeeding within the first hour. In fact, the trend was towards better numbers for the C-section mums.
So when the baby is born, generally if the baby's in good condition at a C-section and kind of establishes those neonatal changes that have to happen, the baby generally comes to mum's chest nearly straight away. I've had patients establish breastfeeding on table. One of our midwives, Kira, is phenomenal at getting that done. For the period while mum is transferred to the theatre recovery, just for monitoring, there's some time for skin-to-skin with dad, which is actually really lovely as well.
Yeah.
So we have a lovely little side area where you just have these dads lined up with these babies, and it's just so lovely to see the bonding happening.
Yeah.
And then the family are united back in recovery once mum's monitor's on and we're happy that she's well. And then breastfeeding starts pretty much immediately then. So it's actually quite quick, and it's a well-worn path. So I don't think anybody needs to be feeling that they're compromising their breastfeeding journey or they're compromising their neonatal bonding or any of that, regardless of the mode of delivery.
It's a very important point, because sometimes there are people, companies,
agendas
that capitalize on the mode of birth and give you the impression that you may have missed on some vital good things if you have a C-section when you compare it with a vaginal delivery.
Yeah.
One of the big things that I've seen recently are these new formulas that are designed specifically for cesarean section mothers.
No.
Yes, whereby they... whereby they are actually claim to have probiotics to help re-establish the healthy microbiome in the baby that they may have missed out on by not coming out through the birth canal and the vagina. And I find it absolutely horrendous, to be honest with you. There's no scientific basis to that. We know that regardless of the mode of delivery, the majority of the gut colonization in the baby actually comes from skin to skin with the mother, the respiratory tract of the mother, and breastfeeding. So if you choose to breastfeed your baby, you will colonize your baby with good healthy bacteria from the outset. Even if you give formula to your baby, your baby's bacteria and gut microbiome will be colonized by the environment that they're in. And the baby's environment is their mother's body.
Yeah, 100%.
And they will get the good bacteria from the mother's skin and the mother's respiratory tract as well. Even people who propose vaginal seeding in babies that have had cesarean section, there's no scientific basis for that either.
No.
So don't feel bad if you've had a cesarean section in terms of these things.
100%. I think the moral of the story is hold your baby close.
Yeah.
And let go of the guilt. It's that simple. It is that simple. And I think most mothers will instinctively feel that, but worry that they're not doing enough.
Yeah. And I mean, a cesarean section is...
sometimes it's a wonderful thing. I had two because things were not working the way they needed to. And I'm grateful for them because the my babies would have been struggling otherwise.
Yeah, I was traumatized during your second cesarean section.
I know. Did we talk about that on here before, though?
No, we didn't. And let me I want to tell you how much of a victim I was during that time. So Anne...
drama queen.
Anne was working in Mount Sinai Hospital in Toronto at the time, and she had her antenatal care there. And she went...
shout out to Mount Sinai. You're brilliant.
And she went into labor and things weren't going right. And the obstetrician who Anne just yesterday was working with as an anaesthetist.
Pretty much, yeah, actually.
Yeah, was about to do the cesarean section, and they were good pals.
And she's brilliant.
And we were in the C-section room and they were cracking jokes.
It was hilarious. We were having so much fun.
And Anne was laughing during her C-section, so much so that the obstetrician had to tell her to stop laughing because her uterus was shaking so much she couldn't actually cut it open.
Yeah, the C-section, the uterine incision was going to be all wonky.
She was like, can you please stop? And then she goes, oh my God, I got a bleeder.
It's really funny.
And I panicked. And I was like, oh my God, we can't stop it. Oh my God, I can't see anything. Your belly is full of blood. And
yeah, she was just joking, though.
She was joking. I didn't know that she was joking. I thought that you were going to, like,
but most importantly, myself and my friend, who was my anaesthetist,
were laughing your asses
both
off.
Both knew it was joking. And we were like, oh, she's so funny.
And then do you remember because of the pressure, the child was delivered. You puked.
Well, yeah, for a lot of different reasons.
Right. And yeah, then
puking can be part of the process, unfortunately.
And then you turned around and he said, give me a kiss. And I said, no, thank you. Get that gob away from me.
Yeah, he's so nice.
And then your obstetrician friend yelled at me and said, you give her a kiss right now.
You're in a room full of women.
Yeah.
Your wife is on the table being cut open to deliver your son. And being very cheerful and brilliant about it. And she asks you for a kiss and you say no. Like, seriously, the whole place just stopped and all heads swung to Afif. Dagger eyes. If looks could kill, he'd be dead 10 times over.
I've never been under so much pressure to kiss somebody.
Damn right. Damn right.
And I did. I'm a true hero.
Oh, yeah. I think you need to do a little Insta poll on that one. I'm not so sure it'll come out in your favour.
So anyway, I think that you guys may have found this informative. And I hope that Anne has maybe put a lot of minds at ease in terms of the associations between an epidural, cesarean sections, and
instrumental deliveries, breastfeeding, all of those things.
Yeah. And actually, if you haven't listened to Anne's interview at the end of season 2 of the Baby Chat podcast, you can go and have a listen to it, because she talks about a lot of these things as well. And it's well worth the listen. So that's it.
Thanks, Afif.
Yeah, see, I'm plugging you. You never plug me on your worthless Instagram page with like 2 followers.
Yeah, I told you I don't have a digital presence. I just use you as my surrogate.
So anyway, we hope you've enjoyed today's episode. We hope to see you again next week. So see you then.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.